Glenn Oliver, Reel 2.
So, right, you took part in the attack on the police station in Ismailia to disarm the Egyptian police. Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah. Right, now, that particular operation, that morning, I believe, well, you'll be able to confirm this, was known as Operation Eagle. Word had got out that it wasn't, it was the police who were doing the terrorising. And the scene that happened, I think, that started all off, that we got to disarm the police was, I've got to think of her name. There was an American lady, somebody, Teresa, Sister Teresa somebody, and these terrorists had got in and they'd molested her and God knows what. And this created a bit of a stink, and they found out that it was to do with the police.
There was an American nun shot in the crossfire.
And
it was seemed as though, I think it was,
Obviously, you've heard the same.
Yeah.
And I believe this is what started it off. This triggered it off. Anyway, we got word, orders to move down. To take on the police stations. One was the Bureau Sanitaire, the other one was the Caracol. I was in a carrier, MMG and Bren, two carriers. The other two carriers with the MMG and Brens, they went on to Bureau Sanitaire. I was on, myself, the Caracol, which is the other police station. The Bureau Sanitaire, I believe, was in French Square. Now, they called on the police to surrender.
How was this done? By loudspeaker?
Yeah, by loudspeaker.
Yeah. And that was somebody speaking in Arabic?
Arabic. Oh, yes, they got the Arabic. Apparently, from what we heard later, they were waiting orders from Cairo to give in or to carry on. Anyway, the next thing I heard, being I was on the Caracol, was this bloody great explosion, which was the tank going in, and that's when the lads went in, opened fire on the Bureau Sanitaire.
So you could hear their fire from where you were.
Yes, that was really heavy fire. There wasn't much fire came from where I was, but there was a bit, and we opened up, and that quietened it down from there.
Did you fire yourself?
Yes, I fired myself.
And what was that MMG?
I fired a friend.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that quietened that down. The length of time, I am a bit lost now. I think it's maybe 2 to 3 hours that they held out. Now, when they surrendered, so to speak, and everybody went into the Caracol and the Bureau Sanitaire. Everybody was surprised at what they saw. The amount of arms there was in their arms coats. Brand new stuff, still in the grease and what have you.
What nationality? What type of weapons?
A lot of British and a lot of American, a mixed bag. Money could have come from anywhere. Could have come from anywhere. Mm. My country buy them up, sell them again.
Mm. Well, a lot of it was still around from the Second World War.
But it was numerous. But the police who fired at us and that, they were using these sort of shotguns, sort of thing. These small ball bearings inside. That was their thing. They put up a fairly good show, considering. The Piat was put in operation, I believe, on the Bureau Sanitaire. They went in one place and the guy came for them, stumps of legs. As I say, we lost our share of men there. They had a sergeant who got the George Cross. It was a fair old battle. As I say, on the Carrico, not too bad.
Yeah.
Pretty nervous on the native side, I'm sorry to say. But that came to conclusion there. We sort of cleaned up around the police stations. I believe somebody took over from us, and then we moved back to our barracks in Alaska. And that was it, and done our other various patrols.
Can we just go back to what you actually did yourself on the attack on the Caracol? Was it you said that there was an announcement made in Arabic and then nothing happened? Well, I mean, did the Egyptians open fire or?
Well, I think there was maybe one or two shots rang out, and then.
So then you were ordered to. So then you were ordered by your platoon commander to open up.
Yeah. I fired a brand and the followers of me fired the old MMG.
And at what stage did you start to see surrender flags?
On a Carrico, it more or less, they were very, I would say within. They seemed to be about a half an hour to an hour, you know? Mm-hmm. They seemed they were trying to work in conjunction with the Bureau Sanitaire, you know.
Yeah, so they were aware of the battle going on over there.
That's right. In between, who on earth they were doing it, I don't know. It seemed to me the Egyptian Red Cross was sort of going up and trying to gather up the people, you know. Mm. Where the hell they were, God knows, you know. Mm. They were policemen who got over the wall and were in the street, knows, you know.
And then did you actually go into the Caracol yourself to clear up?
I went into the Caracol to look around, that's where we saw all these bloody weapons.
And what was your particular job? Was it to deal with the prisoners or deal with the weapons?
Well, to deal with the prisoners, disarm them, and God knows what, make a check, make sure we were all...
So you had to search them all and clear all the weapons? Were they uniformed?
Yes, they were in uniform,
And what was their attitude to you, do you think?
Scared.
Quite justifiably,
They, according to what we heard from the fellows in the Bureau Sanitaire, they were expected to fight on, but obviously they couldn't.
And were there officers there?
There were officers there, I think one had been, he'd been trained by the British police, they've done a course of British police, and been in the army and been to Sandhurst, I believe.
And then what, you took the prisoners to, I think the prisoners were put in French Square, weren't they?
French Square, interrogated and God knows what. Now, of course, after that, that's when
you were stood down.
Yeah.
And was that when you learnt there had been casualties in your unit from the Bureau Sanitaire?
Yeah, that was, I believe that was D Company. Yes, that was D Company.
And I think one man died of wounds later, didn't he?
That's right.
Yeah. So how long after that was, because there was a funeral held, wasn't there? I remember you showed me some pictures.
When was that funeral? I can't give you the exact date of that, actually. Mm-hmm.
No, I can check that. But were you involved in the funeral? Was the whole battalion involved?
I believe we... we were involved. We sort of lined what they called the mall in Moasca, because Moasca means garrison. That means garrison in Arabic. Mm. But the only nicest part of the canal, don't they? And we sort of lined the route, you know. It was a bit subdued. Mm. A bit more detail on that, if you want, at the funeral, which I think... you will come to, Laurie, is Danny Davenport. He was in that company. He was in that attack.
All right, I'll certainly interview him.
Because he was really involved, and he remembers quite vividly. He was right in the forefront of it. He will give you all a gen on that.
He'll give you all
a gen as regards to film. He's got photos as well.
Right. Did you hear about... the backlash in Cairo the next day, Black Saturday?
Yes, we heard about the backlash, Shepherd's Hotel, I believe, and whatever. And we honestly thought everybody was mobilised, and we were, I believe, one brigade was actually ready to move into Cairo, ready to move, plus the remainder of the division.
Yeah, well, there were plans to garrison Cairo if necessary. I've seen them. So, but you were stood too to do that.
Yes, remember quite well. We, what was at that particular time, the bulk of the Egyptian army was in the Sinai at the time of the police station incident, and they were quite expecting him to move, but they didn't. And how they kept it contained was that a plane, one of our planes, used to fly over every day to monitor them, keep an eye on them. That we do know for a fact. Yeah. They didn't move one way or the other. Because they were in the Sinai, we used to let the train go through, which got their rations on, but we used to search that train to make sure there was nobody getting out or nobody coming in.
This was
a regular thing. This was part and parcel of life.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we used to call ourselves Jesse James, holding up trains and searching trains and cars and whatever.
And this was an army train manned by soldiers, was it?
Yeah, their train.
So what was their attitude to you? Was it soldier to soldier, or did they feel that you... Did you get the impression they didn't want you there?
Native being native, they didn't care a lot. They weren't aggressive at all. They sort of tolerated, you know.
So we've finished with the attack on the police station, the disarming of the police. So we're now in sort of getting on to spring 52. When did you, how much longer did you serve in the Canal Zone? You were saying you went off to Kenya after that.
From, as I say, we never got to enjoy Moasca properly. It was the best spot near enough, near Ismailia. We then, they reckoned that because we were to the forefront, the Lancashire Fusiliers were to the forefront in the Canal Zone, they moved us out of Moasca up to Geneva, which is about 30 miles away. And we were near the infiltration plant, the water infiltration plant. And we were there. And done all our training and that, etc.
What sort of training were you doing? Was it counterinsurgency or was it just...
Still counterinsurgency, plus our own training that we had to do, like going on the range for your range course, you know, proficiency pay and all that. And we'd got men, national service men coming in, drafts coming in, so we got to train them up, you see. And this is where I found the national servicemen really good, because a lot of these chaps doing that trouble, at that particular time, national servicemen, they were supposed to be home 28 days before they reported to their TA unit. Before they reported to their TA unit. They were supposed to be home 28 days before the, most of them were doing... done there 28 days, they're still in the Canal Zone.
Mm.
And this was all over, so they were, poor lads, really up against it.
Mm.
Now, in that time, was it Geneva, there was no end of patrol work, just the same. Things were really tight. It's then that we got warned about the Mau trouble. We heard about the Mau trouble that was going on in Kenya. We stood by for that. We didn't think we was going. We were only going as a battalion. The next thing we knew was we had a couple of sergeants come up from the King's African Rifles, who were pretty predominant in East Africa in those days, and they were giving us lectures on Kenya, telling us what to expect, telling us about the Mau, what they'd done. And that was just about the scene. The next thing we knew, that in the October, we all flew down to Nairobi Airport, and we were put in big hangars, and we weren't allowed out for about a week. And then when we did go out, we went into Nairobi. My friend and I, little did we know, but we're walking down Delamere Avenue, which is a famous avenue, and we're near the New Stanley Hotel, which is a prima hotel, and we see two figures come to the top of the steps. It was about 30 yards away, and I looked at my friend, he looked at me. I said, they look familiar. He said, well, of course they're familiar, Len. He said, that's Frank Sinatra and Ava Gardner, and I thought, well, I'll be blowed. And they were down there because Ava Gardner was in this film, The Gambo, The Club Table, and we saw all incidents of MGM Studios with their marvellous trucks and God knows what, and adverts in the newspaper. Clark Gable had 200 stand-ins for himself, all that. But anyway, that was a scene there, as I say.
And this was what, in 1952?
Yeah.
So you weren't in the Canal Zone very long after the bust up with the police station.
When we went down the Canal Zone, when we left the Canal Zone, we was under the impression we was only going to be in Africa for a certain time. No specific time, but a certain time. And we'd be coming back to the Canal Zone. This is what we thought.
Yeah.
Because when we went in there, when we went to East Africa, we were still in Middle East Command. You get back to 3,000 miles away. And we didn't take no weapons or anything, we just went for aircraft, which was something. We left the rear party in Geneva. All the heavy stuff was still in Geneva. And we honestly thought we were going to go back to Geneva, but we never did. About 6 months later, the bulk of our kit went to East African Command, but that was the scene.
You mentioned that you were briefed by the King's African Rifles about the situation in Kenya.
Yeah.
Was that really the only time you got any lectures about counterinsurgency operations and how to deal with terrorists?
Yeah.
So you never had a lecture like that in Suez before you engaged the Egyptian nationalists.
No.
That's interesting, because what I'm trying to look at is really is sort of what the policy was in Egypt, you know, what whether it was the soldiers were left to sort of muddle along as best they could, developed by Erskine or whether it was developed by the politicians. The other thing I wanted to ask you is rules of engagement in the Canal Zone. Did you carry your weapon at all times, and was it loaded at all times?
After the nationalists started? If you went on patrol, obviously you loaded the weapon when you went on patrol. And the same as you ensured the men loaded the weapon on patrol. And it was loaded for the patrol or for the guard. But when you came off that, obviously you unloaded because you weren't in the boat.
And that was always done under supervision of an NCO or an officer?
Under supervision,
And were there rules of engagement? If you were patrolling, were you... nowadays, for instance, in Northern Ireland, there are very strict rules of engagement.
I've seen that handbook, and that is absolutely cool. You've got to be a politician to read it. I have spoken to an officer who was out there. He said, I have to keep an eye on the men, he said, because these rules of engagement, he said, the normal chap, I don't know if he's coming on. If you take a soldier is a soldier. You get fired at, bang, you fire back. You don't have to think, well, my friend's got to get killed first before I can engage.
And if I fire back, I might be done for murder. If I kill someone. So you didn't have very strict rules of engagement? Were you supposed to give a challenge or a warning? Could you just return fire?
I had a little bit of a... When I was on... on a roadblock here in Australia, this is a bit of humorous, this. And up comes this is about 6:05 in the evening in February. Up comes this Egyptian cab, flash one, Cadillac that time. He leans out, he says, "Effendi, can I get through?" I said, "No, you can't." I said, "You'll have to go back 6 o'clock." He said, "Well, if I go back," he say, those Clifty Wallers in there, he said, "they'll smash up me taxi and beat me up." I said, "Well, that's your hard luck, mate." So he turned round, drove off, and there's a village about half a mile up the road, mud huts, etc. Anyway, next morning, 6 o'clock, down he comes, his cab, all smashed up, headlights smashed in, dented, he leans out, he's got black eyes. He said, "I told you I'd get done, didn't he?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "No, you should have got here at 6 o'clock. He said, I'll tell you something, he said. "Do you know or don't you know? King George VI died in his sleep this morning." He's the one who told King George VI died in his sleep.
Yeah.
It was so strange to me at that time, you know, he was all bashed up. He told about King George VI, but I didn't know it. He moved on.
Right, the last question about the canal zone, or about the about sewers, is what were your own reactions to the sewers crisis of 1956? Because you'd been in the canal zone fighting the Egyptian nationalists.
Yeah.
What did you think when Nasser nationalised the Suez Canal Company, and then British forces went in? Do you have any sort of?
Well. We all said that we'd go back.
Yeah.
We said that when we left. It was the best place on earth. But I think we should have finished the bloody job. That's my personal opinion. You know, finished it. Got some sort of whatever it was. I think it was out of our hands. That's my personal opinion. I think myself, Andy Eden was right. That's my personal opinion. He'd done the right thing. Been a foreign secretary, been in a war years, been a soldier. I think we done the right bloody thing. I don't think the Russians or anybody would have done anything. That's my personal opinion.